Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. On this program, we're airing the second part of Dr. Meg Meeker's interview with Dr. Ed Stetzer, the Executive Director of Lifeway Research. Dr. Stetzer is also a prolific author who has pastored churches, planted churches, and trained pastors. He has two master's degrees and two doctorates. He is also the senior fellow of the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton College. He is an impressive man, and he recently became the co-host of the Breakpoint This Week radio program with our good friend John Stone Street. He is one busy man, Dad.
Well, Ryan, I'm glad that we were able to get a few minutes of his time to talk about the state of the church and what an important issue that is. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, Dr. Stetzer gave us so much clarity on the statistics we see and hear again and again. The media and culture paint a dire picture of Christianity as a dying faith, but the numbers don't support that claim. Among convictional Christians, those that are really committed to Christ, divorce isn't rampant, and young adults aren't abandoning their faith. I mean, look at Shirley and me. We've just celebrated our 55th anniversary.
And me, 10.
Yeah, how about that? These couples are staying together in the highest numbers, and evangelical parents are passing their faith on to their kids at a rate of about 70%. So I urge you to download yesterday's broadcast and get the truth about what the numbers say about biblical marriage and parenting. And Ryan, what we're about to hear was an interview conducted by our colleague, Dr. Meg Meeker.
That's right.
Who always does a fine job.
She does. She was at the International Christian Retail Show, and sometimes in these broadcasts, you'll hear a little bit of the background noise. But Dr. Stetzer has still so much more to share about this topic of the church, so let's jump right into the second part of his interview.
Is the Christian church in America healthy?
No, I wouldn't say it's healthy. I would say, and there are wings of it that are more healthy than others. Mainline Protestantism is in serious trouble.
Why?
There are more than one reason. Some of it's demographic. They're not having kids like they used to. Some of it's theological. They've moved away from what historically they held, and I think they had this desire that, well, if we kind of changed our views to be perceived as more tolerant, that all the people who left would rush in and come back, and they didn't. Oh. And so it's collapsing, mainline Protestantism is. Evangelicalism, I don't think evangelicalism is healthy. There are healthy segments of evangelicalism. There are healthy churches. But I think as a whole, evangelicalism needs a clearer focus on what the gospel is, needs to get more faithfully and fruitfully on mission. So I think there's a lot still to be done. Did you say healthy? No. Segments, yes.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean it's dying.
Okay.
Nobody thinks that it's dying.
No, the church is not. Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you. Yeah. The church is not dying. And, you know, the health of the church, we can always do better and always do better because the church is inhabited by very, very broken people.
Yeah, you like me. Yep.
Are we doing a good enough job in general teaching the scriptures to our children?
No, not at all. I think that's part of the challenge, is that we need a word-driven, a word-centered church where the faith is passed on. Now, there are some urban legends. You may have heard that 86% of evangelical youth drop out of church after high school, never to return. That's not a real stat. The people who put out that stat retracted it. They said they're sorry. The news agency that published it retracted the story, said they're sorry. But my guess is half your audience is hearing that and saying, oh, 86% drop mm-hmm. out. They don't. Well, actually, the most recent study is from the University of Southern California, published in Oxford University Press. So these are not Christian types like me, you know, trying to point people to Jesus. And they said that evangelicals keep about two-thirds of the next generation, it's a multi-decadal study.
So let's restate that for every parent listening there, that if you're an evangelical parent,
yes,
mom and dad, yep, I assume, in a home, that you have two-thirds chance that your child is going to stay in evangelical.
Yeah. And
is that correct?
It gets higher if both parents are married and going to church together. I believe it's up to 70%.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's great news for all the worried parents out there.
Well, and I think what's happening is, you know, I have three daughters, so pray for me. and I love my girls. Yeah. But if I spent my life telling them, hey, listen, another another stat is that 94% drop out. If I say, girls, 94% of you who go off to college, you're going to hear this is all a bunch of bunk and you're going to leave the faith. We're teaching our kids a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So 94% of, I don't want to get
this
right.
That's a fake stat. So
good.
Both
okay.
86% and 94% are not real stats. Nobody anywhere has ever said that.
Of kids that go off to college, drop away from
their
faith.
Yeah, exactly.
Those
are
fake.
But those are fake stats. People say, well, how do you know they're fake stats? Because I know the people who do that and they're really sorry.
But it's true. And, you know, unfortunately, with the internet and the access to all sorts of information, there's so much bad information.
It really is.
And,
and let me
myths
jump in too.
That are
people,
circulating.
Because people want them. You've got a media that wants to say it's true.
Yeah.
And you've got Christians that want to use it to motivate other Christians. And that is a match that leads to really bad statistics.
We are perceived, evangelical Christians, evangelical charismatic Catholics, whoever, are perceived as doomsday naysayers, really negative people. Why is that?
Well, I think some people perceive us that way. But there's a real helpful book by a guy named Bradley Wright. He's a Ivy League professor at University of Connecticut. And his title of his book, I wrote the foreword to it. It won the Christianity Today Book of the Year, or one of the books of the year. I did more than one
category. Say it again, Bradley Wright.
Bradley Wright. The title is Christians Are Hate-Filled Hypocrites and Other Lies You've Been Led to Believe.
I love it.
Now, here's the thing. What he does is he debunks the idea that people think Christians are hate-filled hypocrites. And so here's the deal. In our research, I lead Lifeway Research. Let me tell you what most people think about us. Little to nothing. So they're not sitting around saying, man, I don't like those evangelicals. They're not sitting around saying, I don't like those Pentecostals or the Baptists. They're sitting around saying, I wonder how my kids are doing. I wonder what's on television. So I think the perception is not our studies show the perception of Christians is not nearly as bad as Christians' perceptions of the perceptions of Christians.
I see that. But one of the things that I see on television
is... That's a different story.
Yeah. Christians are portrayed as stupid and dumb.
You can't find a positive
Christians
portrayal.
Christians and fathers.
Yeah. Oh, no question. And I think this is a flip from the 50s. You go back, you know, think of I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
Where Lucy was portrayed as dumb and you know, and disconnected from reality. And I don't think that's healthy. And I don't think that now that we flipped it, that that's healthy, that basically every father on television is first married to a beautiful woman and he's ugly and dumb. And you can't find a positive portrayal of an evangelical Christian on popular television. Yet, one out of eight of Americans is an active church-going and evangelical. Mm-hmm. And so in the midst of that, so compare that to other minorities, right? So we can think of minorities, persons of color. We can think of LGBT representation. I mean, recent studies have shown that people by multiple times overestimate the percentage of LGBT persons in society.
Because the media portrays it as 50% of the culture.
Yeah, and so people get that. Well, so here's what I would say. I think that where we are now in our culture is an acknowledgement that Christians were never a religious majority. Convictional Christians were never a religious majority, but we're a convictional minority. So we're going to have to deal with some things related to religious liberty. We're going to deal with some things related to how we engage culture. But let's be involved in culture creation. Mm-hmm. Let's be involved in culture engagement so people see what a Christian's really like.
And I think that we're much more likely to do those things if we have the information you have. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important to get out there.
Thank
because
you.
It's positive and it's encouraging because there are a lot of times that I feel Christians get branded by, you know, media and television and you know, the internet as non-thinking, stupid people that are uneducated, narrow-minded, yada, yada, yada. And we feel that right out the gate, we need to defend our faith. So we kind of come into any conversation, relationship, or something quite thorny.
Yeah.
With a little bit of a chip on our shoulder.
Yeah.
Seeing real numbers like you give us is get off that posture,
people.
Yeah,
I think a couple things. The way we engage culture, we can't be mad at everybody. You can't hate a people and reach a people at the same time. Let's, with the love of Christ, show and share the love of Jesus to a broken and hurting world. When we hear some of these stats, I mean, you went to medical school, you're super smart, people like they're out there saying, I can't decipher all these stats. Here's what you do. When you hear a stat, I heard recently someone say that over 80% of Christians have dropped out of church in the last 10 years. And I just asked, well, where did you hear that? Well, where? Yeah, exactly. I read
somewhere.
Well, where? And if you can't evidence where the stat's from, don't quote where the stat is from. So the stats even we use here, I've quoted University of Southern California, Pew, The American Religious Identification Survey, the General Social Survey, Lifeway Research, you know, and so we, real data has a source. If you just heard from somebody or your experience has been, that's not real research. Let's not quote it. Let's not demoralize the body of Christ with stats that aren't true. The situation is challenging, but let's live on mission in the midst of
it. And let's not make it a lot worse than it really is.
Exactly.
So how can our listeners read information and stuff on the internet in a wise fashion? How can they know if a study is legit or not?
Yeah.
Or how do they test what they're reading?
Well, I think part of it is to be a little more skeptical.
Great.
And I was reading a
of everything
of,
you
all,
read.
Of all stuff, you know, they can't put it on the internet unless it's true. I heard that. So, but if it's on the internet, it doesn't mean it's true. So there was a study recently, a study that was in a major Christian magazine that's right around us right now on the floor where we are in Orlando. And the people love Jesus, but there's this group that doesn't like youth groups. They want to do family integrated, which is great. We both would say thank God for people mm-hmm. with that emphasis. But they did a survey on their site, and they basically asked, are youth groups causing teenagers to lose their faith? Okay, basically. And of course, everyone who goes to the site, which is against youth groups, voted that teenagers cause. So then the news magazine, who loves Jesus and I write for sometimes, wrote the article that, I forget the exact number, 90% of people think youth groups are causing. No, they're not. It's like going to a website that says Wendy's hamburgers are bad and voting whether or not Wendy's hamburgers are bad. Of course the people who go to that website
that's right,
think that.
Say that. Yeah.
So find out the methodology. Question, you know, where's it come from? If they say, well, I heard somebody say, no, look to find the original mm-hmm. source. All right, another example. Okay, Christians and non-Christians divorce at the same rate. Okay, you've heard that stat.
All the time. And it's
okay.
All 50%.
Exactly.
Half of the Christian parents you know are...
Exactly, yeah. Which nobody thinks the divorce rate is 50%. No real researcher does.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. Do Christians and non-Christian divorce at the same rate? No research says that unless you do it the way we talked about earlier. Remember, 75% of Americans say they're Christians and 25% say they're not. They divorce at about the same rate.
Got it.
Now let's go to the convictional Christians. The numbers drop drastically. People who are Christians or are walking with the Lord or going to church together, they don't get divorced much at all compared to the general population. Mm-hmm. When you ask, what did you mean by Christian? Stop letting bad data. Let's all be on a mission together to quash bad data for the glory of God and the mission of His
Amen.
Church.
Amen. You know, I do a lot of work with teenagers, and constantly I run up against that. Oh, the overwhelming majority of teenagers are sexually active, da, da, da. That's a public perception, but it's not reality.
Not what the data says.
It's not reality. Yeah, it's not what the data says.
Not what the data says from people who don't even agree with
exactly.
us.
Exactly.
You can read Guttmacher Institute data
that
says, which is Planned Parenthood.
Exactly. So. I so appreciate you saying that. So why are these numbers important for our listening audience? What do they need to understand about the fact that we're hearing that churches are diminishing and Christians are going away and we're close to being a communist country and God is all but dead everywhere? What are you here to tell us through
research? Well, let me say, some of what you said is actually true. People are dropping out of church. Now, according to the most recent Pew data, in the switching, people are always dropping in and out of churches. In the switching, more people switched to evangelicalism than from evangelicalism in the most recent Pew data. You probably didn't hear that in the headlines.
No. Okay, so repeat that. More people
switched to evangelicalism than from evangelicalism.
Okay.
So in other words, evangelicals were the net gain numerically.
So it works.
Yeah, I think evangelism matters. So I guess to summarize this, what you're calling me to do, I would say don't believe the narrative of death, but do recognize the church has, we're entering challenging times. We're already in them, but it's not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need is a church that's going to show and share the love of Jesus to a world that's broken and lost. We don't need a church going around saying the sky is falling, because even if it was, and it's not statistically, I've read the end of the book, Jesus wins. And so in the middle, I'm going to live on mission. From now until He returns, I'm going to live on mission. So what I would say is facts are our friends. So let's get the real facts of the state of the church.
Learn to read wisely.
You know, I got to tell you, it doesn't take a PhD to say, well, where's your source on that?
And I think people are very intimidated.
Yeah.
They're intimidated to dig a little bit more and say, where does this come from?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons when the Pew data came out, I kind of jumped in those secular news sources and, you know, wrote for CNN. And, you know, they had an article beforehand that millennials are dropping out of church in droves.
Yes.
Say, well, Ed, is your article contrary to that? Well, it actually is not. I mean, millennials are dropping out of some churches in droves, But at the same time, there's a significant percentage of young millennial evangelicals are engaging in the church. And the fastest growing trend inside Christianity for young adults is to go to large contemporary non-denominational churches. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. This is how I started my Washington Post article. There's right now a famous book that's made the rounds about this author. She's sort of left evangelicalism and became Episcopal. And everyone's publishing and saying, well, this is just, you know, this is, you're all over the newspapers. And she's a very, very gifted writer. And so I just started my Washington Post article just to say, okay, in 2013, 12,000 people, now Episcopal Church is a mainline denomination.
Yes.
12,000 adults were confirmed into the entire U.S. Episcopal Church. In that same year, 10,000 new attendees started attending Perry Noble's New Spring Church in South Carolina.
Yeah.
But what I would say is there's a vibrant faith across North America. In the Old Testament, it talks about the men of Issachar. And a very brief reference to them, these people of Issachar, they discerned the times and knew therein what they should do. Mm-hmm. I think we need to discern the times and know what we should do. Both of those matter, discerning the times and then listening to the scriptures and doing what Jesus calls us
Absolutely.
To do.
Absolutely. What does a courageous Christian today look like? What do they say? Where do they go? How do they handle divisive issues?
Yeah, that's a great question.
That's a huge challenge for us now.
And I think we have to recognize that our views are minority views. And that's hard for some. Not on everything, but on some of the great issues of the day, all the polling says, polling from real companies that do real good work, that we are a minority view on issues, for example, of sexuality and other things. So I think we have to acknowledge that, and we have to say graciously and winsomely, we have to pray for people who differ than us and show the love of Jesus to people who view things differently than us. But then we have to say, okay, but this is what we believe. There may be some legal protections we need for some of what we believe. We increasingly see that. Mm-hmm. But this is what we believe. And then let's see if what we believe produces the kind of people who care about their neighbor, who care about the poor, who share the gospel with others. And what happens is the fruit of our labors, our children, mm-hmm. the next generation, the generation after that, and our own lives show a life changed by Jesus. I mean, we see this in Scripture. They'll see your good works and glorify your Father mm-hmm. who's in heaven. There are times we have to stand up. You know, we're going to have to stand up for some things in culture. I think that's essential. But I think most of the time we need to spend a little more time on our knees and a little more time with our neighbors.
I think that one of the divisive issues, and it seems that there are litmus tests that a lot of millennials, so again, I'm generalizing, I don't have any research for this, but this comes up over and over again, is about, you know, sexual orientation, LGBT, and that kind of a thing. It's like, how do you stand on that? And then they decide if they're going to listen to what you have to say about your faith.
Yeah.
And, you know, many say, why should I believe in your God when your God that says who I am is wrong?
Oh, yeah. We need to recognize this is the next two decades.
Yes.
Now, what I would say to you is that I think ultimately we have to be able to say, well, you know, in my beliefs, which I seek to live in my life and kind of focus on this idea that as for me and my house will serve the Lord, mm-hmm. this is by what we live. We recognize that society has other values. And I think we have to be honest, too, that battle has been lost. You know, what do we do now? Well, I think ultimately we continue to point to what biblical marriage looks like, what biblical raising of the next generation looks like, and we show a better way. But there's going to be times where, you know, we're going to speak into the culture, times when we're going to create an alternative way of living that people look at and say, oh, that's what it looks like when people live out the truths of the gospel. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to speak winsomely. People come to us, say, well, here's what I believe. Here's why I believe it. Not with the silly, kind of stupid things that people sometimes say because they just don't like people. Mm-hmm. I mean, people say, well, you're just this or that. Well, don't do that. Just say, man, you know what? I value you as a person. The Jesus I follow point and the scriptures that I read, take me somewhere else. And I want to love you and be your friend. I think it'd just be great if we would befriend a lot of people, not hate a lot of people. Because, again, you can't hate a people and reach a people.
Exactly. I love that. I love that saying. But I think, you know, in the next 10 years, that's going to be a real tough.
I believe it will be the issue that we will have bumps for the next 10 to 20 years.
I agree. So. I agree because it comes up over and over and over.
But, you know, we've been on the wrong side of history before.
Yes, we have.
A lot of people would have said that this little group that was following this guy who died, and they didn't believe he rose from the dead, but the disciples knew that they would turn over the whole world. So let's not be afraid of being on the wrong side of history and the minority on this view.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Just do it graciously and lovingly from within our faith and our sincerely held beliefs.
Yes. Before we go, a couple of questions. You know, you kind of answered it. What are the biggest challenges for Christians going to be in the next two decades? And where do we need to be savvy and wise and learn and particularly prayerful?
Yeah. Well, in addition to the one we just talked about, I would also say that one of the things that Christians are going to need each other more. When there's a downward pressure on Christian belief historically around the world, Christians tend to either turn to one another or turn on one another.
Yes.
And, you know, and I've seen places where they turn on one another and there's this internal battle, that division. And I just think we're going to need one another. And so that's why I'm thankful. I have the privilege of serving on the board of the National Association of Evangelicals, because I want us to recognize that we need each other. We're not creating one church. We're just recognizing that we're following one Jesus. So I think that's going to be a key thing. We're going to need one another more. I'd say number two, I think we need a clearer sense of the gospel and being unashamed of it. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately we're going to get back to the place, we need to get back to the place where you have people teaching the scriptures more consistently, sharing the gospel more faithfully. In other words, we're going to have Christians that look and live more devout lives if we're going to engage the future generation. This consumer Christianity, well, I like this church, I like this church, they're meeting my needs, they're not. I don't think that's going to stand up in a world where there's downward pressure on
Christians. Exactly. And I think that church is kind of like a marriage. I mean, you know, you just got to stay in there and weather it. You know, one of the questions I was going to ask, what does the American church need to change, to do to change? But I think that Christians turn on one another. We love to eat our own.
Yeah.
And so we turn on each other. Well, you're wrong on that issue and wrong on that issue. And so it becomes very divisive very quickly. And I hate to use the word tolerate each other, but I do think that we have to be more loving and open and considerate of one another.
Well, I would just say this. If we genuinely believe that being a follower of Jesus is that we're born again, we go from death to life, and we're born again into a new family, shouldn't we get along with that family? Mm-hmm. I mean, so if we genuinely believe that. Now, again, I'm not saying that everyone who names the name Christian or calls himself a Christian is. But I am saying that there are followers of Jesus that are Pentecostal and Presbyterian and Baptist and non-denominational and Lutheran, and I want to join hands with them. And not in everything. I'm going to plant churches probably separately and other things. But I want to join together, show and share love of Jesus. We need one another.
Yes, we do. And need is a hard thing.
Yeah.
My guest has been Dr. Ed Stetzer. He is currently working as the president of Lifeway Research. He lives in Nashville, Tennessee.
Tennessee.
And you have three daughters.
I do, and they're awesome.
Can I ask how old they are?
They're 17. I almost said 16. Just last week, she turned 17. 17, 13, and 10. And I love being the dad of three
girls. Aren't they just the best?
Oh, awesome.
And let me tell you something. The way a daughter looks at her dad.
Yeah, I love my girls.
Every girl takes one man to her grave, and it's her dad.
Yeah. Yeah, I love
it's your
my
dad.
Girls.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining
Thank
me, Dr.
Thank you so much.
Stetzer.
Great time.
Great time. Thank you.
Oh, Dad, this is such a helpful and hopeful message. Hearing the truth about the state of the faith is encouraging, and it also helps us to stand up for what we know is the best way, and it's always been God's way.
And as we heard in today's presentation, we know that much of the church is alive and well, but we can't overlook the other part of Dr. Stetzer's message. Deeply committed Christians are still in the minority, especially on the cultural issues of the day. But we still need to let our voices be heard. We must continue to speak the truth winsomely and clearly. And we must live in such a way that we show the world what it looks like when people of faith live out the truth of the gospel. They will know us by our fruit.
That is so true, Dad. We make a stand for Christ when we base our lives on His word. It's countercultural, but it's authentic, and authentic Christianity always has been countercultural. And here at Family Talk, we want to help you live counterculturally as well. Our 2015 Ministry and Resource Catalog is full of resources to help you or someone you love parent, live, and speak from a biblical worldview. And this month, your donation for any of those resources will be doubled thanks to a generous matching grant. You can find our catalog online at drjamesdobson.org, or you can also request us to mail you a catalog by calling us at 877-732-6825. And did you know there's a conversation going on right now on our Facebook page about this very broadcast? That's right. People all over the world are sharing insights and conversation about this broadcast on facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson. So join that conversation now.
Ryan, we've said it before, let me say it again, that we now have 3 million likes on Facebook.
That's right. We have over 3 million fans from all around the world.
And in that regard, we're the number one ministry in the United States. That kind of takes my breath away.
Actually, Dad, we're the number one ministry in the world right now. The Lord has blessed us greatly.
There's just an awful lot of people out there. And if the listeners on this program today are paying attention to our Facebook post, we thank you for that. If you're not, why don't you check us out? Become number 3,000,001.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it? This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.